This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, guys, listen to me. I need all your eyes. Okay? This is what we train for. This is what we work for. This is who we are. We came out and we found a way. We always said it would not be pretty. We'll win the game. We'll come back in here and have a good time and figure out how we can get better. This is what I need. This is what I need. Everybody listen. You know, we win one moment at a time.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Junkyard Dogcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hill. Got Ben Wolk with us on this Tuesday afternoon. A lot to talk about after a busy few days for the Bulldogs. Several Bulldogs heard their names called at the NFL draft. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the recruiting season that we're in, closing in on the month of May. We're also going to talk about UJ Hoops getting a big addition and working to add to it as well. But first, we got to go to what is going to briefly be a recurring segment on this podcast. Kip Adams is out on vacation, and we're going to throw it to Ben for the KAI, the Kip Adams inventory, the itinerary for his trip over to Italy. Ben, what do you got? What is Kip up to on this Tuesday afternoon?
Well, you have to keep in mind, too, we're relying a lot on my ability to comprehend time zones and also read Kip's full itinerary. But I believe Kip left Florence today and on train, maybe went through Naples, if I'm not mistaken, and is arriving in Sorrento in the Amalfi Coast at some point today. So he's probably enjoying a nice dinner with some views in the Amalfi Coast, and it looks like he's going to be there really for the next couple of days before he heads back to Rome. So, as you know, I'll repeat what I said last week. It's a tough time to be Kip Adams.
I don't know how he does it. And we're also going to have to give him a little bit of grief because he was messaging us and like about work. It's like, hey, just chill out. Enjoy Italy. We got it covered back here in Athens.
Yeah, I didn't even reply to the message. I didn't want to condone any kind of behavior. He was, you know, the texting while you're in the Amalfi Coast about work-related stuff. Like, I don't want any of that.
No, and I don't blame you. That was the right strategy. I will definitely have to not engage. Let him enjoy this trip before he gets back next week. Well, like I mentioned, Ben, there's a lot to talk about, and let's start with the NFL draft. Another very productive one for Georgia. Georgia had 8 players drafted. I'm going to run through the order real quick. Brock Bowers goes to the Raiders. Amarius Mims goes to the Bengals. Those were both in the first round. Ladd McConkey to the Chargers. Kamari Laster to the Texans. Javon Bullard to the Packers in the second round. Tyke Smith goes to the Buccaneers in the third round. And then the final two picks on Saturday, Cedric Van Pran goes to the Bills in the 5th round, and Zion Lowe goes to the Falcons in the 6th round. 8 players picked. That is 33 Bulldogs who have been drafted in the past 3 years. Very productive and not necessarily surprised. I think I probably set the over-under around 8.5, so just a little below that. But still a very productive draft for Georgia. I believe they were tied for the 6th most picks from one school. Michigan led the way with 13, and I believe Texas was next with 11. So, Ben, just what did you think of how the draft played out as far as Georgia players are concerned, where they wound up going and how this thing played out for Georgia?
Well, I mean, in Brock Bowers' case, I mean, I think the Las Vegas Raiders are probably thrilled that he fell to 13. I don't think that when they were slotted in at 13 months ago that they thought that Brock Bowers would be available at that point. And they just took a really, really good tight end last year out of Notre Dame as well. And so I think that it wasn't a situation where they were coming into this draft saying, we need a tight end, we need to upgrade at that position. But I think when there's a best player available on the offensive side like Brock Bowers was, and he was sitting there and he dropped to them after six quarterbacks went in the top 12 picks, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit more. But, you know, I think that that was a good landing spot for him. I think that what's interesting is what the quarterback position looks like there as well, and whether that's a situation that Brock's having. I know he doesn't like to lose, and so I don't know if it's a situation where he's going to have to deal with a couple of frustrating years or whether they'll have it figured out early on. I mean, Amarius Mims protecting Joe Burrow, clearly. You know, you look at the Bengals, and I know there was some talk on draft night, and Nick Saban brought up some comments that probably had some people feeling some type of way about Amarius Mims and, you know, whether it was a good pick or not. But, I mean, here's the deal. There's not going to be a more physically gifted offensive lineman in this draft class than Amarius Mims. And I think you put him on a team that's made playoff runs in the past, that has an MVP caliber quarterback in Joe Burrow. I mean, that's a good environment to be in. I think that it's, you know, I sent a message out about it on Thursday. I think Joe Burrow is probably thrilled when he gets eyes on Amarius Mims. He's going to say, thank goodness, this is the guy that is protecting me. But you look outside of the first round, would have loved to see Ladd McConkey in that first round, but just the way some of the things shook out with some other wide receivers at the end of that first round, some other guys jumped ahead of him there. Jim Harbaugh obviously liked what he saw from his brief film studies that I'm sure he had of Ladd McConkey during his Michigan coaching career. So I thought that was a good landing spot for him as well. And then the Packers, you know, we talk so much about the Eagles and, you know, the Philadelphia Dogs and all this. And it's like when you look at the Packers, not just the fact that they have drafted Georgia players, but they have drafted really a type of Georgia player that I think you just want on your football team. I mean, you look at Eric Stokes, you look at Quay Walker, you look at Devontae Wyatt, now you look at Javon Bullard. I mean, the term dog gets overused, especially probably in the Georgia sphere. But that's really the type of football player that the Packers seem to be drafting. And so I think, you know, I said this too. I would love to see a Packers-Eagles game in Sanford Stadium. Let the Georgia fans flock in. That would be a great environment.
Yeah, I mean, at least have a preseason game here. You're telling me, who was it? Was it Quay that said bring in the hedges?
So, yeah, that's right. Might as well build the hedges. I will also add, I would say the surprise for me from the draft, I guess more on the opposite side of all of that, is Marcus Rosemy-Jack Saint not getting drafted, I feel like was a, I don't know. I mean, you know, they all have their evals and they have all these scouting departments. And I understand there's a lot of work and everything that goes into it. But it was just, it seems like a miss on my end, that he seemed like someone that would have landed in the draft. But you also never know with guys' agents and things like that late in the draft. Sometimes they might be encouraging teams like, hey, they'd rather go as an undrafted free agent so they can select where they're going and things like that. But he's someone that I thought would have snuck into to day three of the draft.
Definitely. I think I might have had him as a fourth rounder. I thought especially just his ability to block. I mean, you know, I think that I thought that would make him a little more valuable. But like you said, Ben, it's probably better off for him. You know, you go to Washington. I mean, they got Jahan Dotson. They got Terry McLaurin. And I can't remember. They might have picked another receiver during this draft. But that is a pretty good situation as far as trying to make that roster. Really like the Bullard pick, like you said. Cedric Van Praan to the Bills. I had him going earlier than the fifth round. But I think you're looking at their starting center, and I think it's pretty cool that he's going to get you know, hooked back up blocking for James Cook again. He's a little bit used to that. I think Cedric's going to do very well in Buffalo. Kamari Laster with the Texans. That was the one projection I got right. I had him going 42nd overall to Houston.
Nice.
I think he's going to do well there. That made a lot of sense to me. When you look at all of these picks, is there one fit you like more than the others? And I would say, I wrote this on Sunday in my superlative story, I love Ladd going to the Chargers because they lost Keenan Allen. They lost Mike Williams. Jim Harbaugh knows what he's getting into with Ladd McConkey. Yeah, I went back and looked. That Orange Bowl, he only had two catches. It wasn't anything crazy, but I think, you know, the Chargers brass sort of knew what Ladd's about. And also they know that they can count on him to block because we, you know, you and I both know at Georgia, you don't get on the field unless you're going to be willing to block. So I really liked McConkey to the Chargers. Was there one fit among these eight that really stood out to you that you thought might have been the best among Georgia players?
I'd be inclined to agree with you on the Ladd pick. I mean, he's going to a really good quarterback situation. He's going to a head coach that I personally, and I know that there's, you know, differing polarizing opinions on Harbaugh, but he's someone that I believe in is going to build a roster the right way. And I trust his talent evaluations. And I think that that, you know, played out in this NFL draft itself with how well Michigan drafted and the type of team that they had, despite not necessarily having the recruiting profile that some of the other national championships of recent have had. And so I think it's a really good fit for Ladd. I would have liked to see him in the tail end of the first round, but honestly, when the Bills traded out of the first round and when the Chiefs traded up and took a different wide receiver, that was when I was kind of like, you know, it might be better served for him to drop out of the first round so long as he doesn't end up in Carolina, which he did not. And so I think him being in L.A., you know, maybe he'll get to reunite with Stetson a little bit in the offseason too.
Yeah, that crossed my mind. I wonder if, you know, maybe they could all get an apartment or a house out there. Them, Warren McClendon, you know, he's with the Rams too.
I mean, yeah, that's right. It's a
fit that makes a lot of sense. Now, I'm going to throw it to you, Ben. One of my favorite things about following you on social media is you'll post stuff, and you never can really tell if you're being serious, if you're just sort of poking the bear. So I got to get your thoughts on this. Eight overall, Atlanta Falcons picking. I get Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback from Washington, a guy I really, really like. The problem is they just signed Kirk Cousins to this huge deal. Do you really like this pick? Were you just having a little bit of fun? Give me your thoughts on Michael Penix to the Falcons. The Falcons using that top pick, their first-round pick, on another quarterback.
Well, the number one opinion that I have, like my one thing that I will always stand by is I think that I have a good pulse on this, and we'll find out. This will be a situation where it'll play out, and we'll see. When everybody feels a certain way about something that happens, or whether it's a draft night or in a game or it's a trade or whatever it is, when you're online and you're reading what everybody feels about it and everyone really seems to feel strongly one way about it, I like to fade the public. That's just my general approach on it. I'm not a contrarian per se, but when it comes to certain situations, I read the room and I say, I think I'm going to fade the public on this one. And so I, going into the draft, if you had said to me, what are the Falcons going to do at 8? I would have said trade down. I would have said take Dallas Turner, the UCLA edge rusher, maybe even add another offensive weapon. Like, I would not have expected the Falcons to take a quarterback. But the moment that Michael Penix got picked, I think that the reaction from everybody was pretty much the same. What just happened? Why did they do this? How did they do this? And when I started to read that, I said, I think this is a fade the public moment. So I chose, right or wrong, that I think that I'm going to fade the public on this one. And it's not necessarily what I believe in Michael Penix. Like, I think that I might feel like almost the opposite of you on this one, where it's I'm not a huge Michael Penix guy. He's not a draft eval that I looked at or even when I was watching him in college and said, I think this translates really, really well to the next level. I mean, I think there's some things that he does really well, but he wouldn't have been super high on my QB draft board necessarily. But I do kind of buy into the idea of if the Falcons brass believes in Michael Penix, which clearly they do, that now is as good of a time as any for the Falcons to solidify the quarterback situation. So I actually buy the idea of signing Kirk Cousins to a 4-year deal that I would argue is really more of a 2-year deal, just in terms of how it's the dead cap and what's possible in terms of getting rid of Kirk Cousins' contract after 2 years. Here's my thing with it. I think that Kirk Cousins is better than Michael Penix now. So a lot of people have asked me, why would you take Michael Penix if you already have Kirk Cousins? Or the other side of that, why would you sign Kirk Cousins if you were just going to go draft Michael Penix? Well, I think that Kirk Cousins is better than Michael Penix going into the 2024 season. So I think that the Falcons want to pay money to a quarterback to have a really good quarterback for the 2024 season that they think is better than probably anybody that they would have drafted in the 2024 draft. And so I think that the Falcons feel that Kirk Cousins is, out of Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and, you know, all the quarterbacks that could have gone off the board in this draft, that Kirk Cousins is the best quarterback for this season. And so they're going to pony up and pay up to be able to do that. I think that year two is where it gets a little bit interesting, and it all is dependent on what kind of player Michael Penix becomes. And I think that's the obvious variable in all of this. If Michael Penix becomes a really good player, chances are year one is Kirk Cousins and you're paying him QB1 money, and that's totally fine. And you have a quarterback that you're developing or whatever. If in year two, it starts to become a question, who's better and who's worse, I think that's sort of the turning point that the Falcons have to decide what their plan is. And yeah, it rubbed Kirk Cousins the wrong way. There's a lot of people out there that are going to be like, how did you treat your quarterback like this? Or I saw someone made the comment or the analogy, like, this isn't, you know, like, this is cheating on your wife at the honeymoon. Like, this isn't like, you know, this isn't like the Aaron Rodgers situation. This isn't like some other situations that have played out. Like, this is someone that you just brought in. But here's the thing. Kirk Cousins is 36 years old. He's coming off an Achilles injury. He had, as mad as he might be, he has to be self-aware enough to know that the Falcons have to have contingency plans. And like, look, let's say Kirk Cousins is awesome the next 2 years. The Falcons are not drafting someone that they like as much as it seems like they liked Michael Penix, because if Kirk Cousins is really good, the Falcons are drafting in the 20s, and we just watched 6 quarterbacks go in the top 12 picks. You know, the chances that you're getting a quarterback that you really love to that caliber is not that likely if Kirk Cousins is playing as well as it seems like the Falcons are expecting him to, based on what they're paying him and the fact that they wanted to go get the quarterback now. If Kirk Cousins doesn't play well and he doesn't live up to that contract, then you probably want to make sure that you have a backup option and that you have gotten ahead of the game and you're not looking, you know, 1, 2, 3 years down the line and saying, man, the quarterback that we really wanted never came. And so now we're sort of back into this cycle where Kirk Cousins aged out and now we're trying to draft a Desmond Ridder or pick up a Taylor Heineke in free agency and your quarterback situation looked bad. Now, I will say, I think that the last 3 years have scarred the Falcons front office. And I think that seeing Desmond Ridder and Marcus Mariota and Taylor Heineke and everybody trot out there game after game after game and turn the ball over and all, you know, all this stuff, it probably scarred them a little bit. And I think that it's a little bit surprising that they went to, you know, they signed a $180 million quarterback and they draft a first round quarterback. But I was surprised how much everyone was complaining about the fact that the Falcons basically went from one of the worst quarterback rooms in the NFL to one of the best quarterback rooms in the NFL, basically in a matter of 2 months. And I get it. It was surprising. It was not necessarily the pick that I would have anticipated going in or what I would have done necessarily if I was the GM. But I think that there was a lot of logic to the decision. Again, this is where I go back to me wanting to fade the public on this, is because of how much I saw the logic and everybody else was acting like it was the most illogical draft pick of all time, was when I went from Michael Penix bit to maybe this is how I feel a little bit more strongly about it. But again, all of it comes down, and this is how it is with every pick, all of it comes down to, does Michael Penix end up being a good quarterback? And also, I would say Kirk Cousins being good this year, because if Kirk Cousins is terrible this year and the Falcons have the number 2 overall pick, it kind of looks really, really stupid. I will also say, I think that there was some level of thinking ahead from Terry Fontenot and the Falcons front office. I think that this is something that they have been thinking about for several years, because there was a lot of conversation 2-3 drafts ago when Justin Fields was available. A lot of people thought that the Falcons should have taken Justin Fields, and Justin Fields could turn out to be great in Pittsburgh. But I think at the time there was this idea that the Bears were genius for trading up and going and get this quarterback that all these other teams sat on. And now you look at it, I think that the Falcons have a quarterback in Michael Penix that I think that they believe in more than they ever believed in Justin Fields. So they have that guy in-house now. He doesn't have to play right away and be forced into the situation. And over the last 3 drafts, instead of trying to figure out the quarterback situation, then they went and got a tight end. They went and got a wide receiver. They went and got a running back. Now, there could be some pushback in terms of whether those picks have panned out or whether they're going to perform the way that people would like out of top 10 picks. But I think that there was some thought like, hey, we don't want to get our quarterback now, but let's go get some offensive weapons for them so that, you know, come the right offseason, we can either sign a guy or we can go draft a guy. Or I think what's going to turn out to be a really smart decision, figure out both of that now so that over the next four drafts, you don't have to think about the quarterback one time. Again, all assuming that Michael Penix actually turns out to be good. That's my big thing with it. I'm more concerned about whether Michael Penix is actually good than whether taking a quarterback after signing a $180 million quarterback is the right decision.
I think it's fair to point that out, because I think a big piece of why so many people were upset, and I was upset too when it happened, is one, you went and drafted a quarterback with your first pick. Two, you got a quarterback that a lot of people had convinced themselves was still going to be there maybe a little bit later. Now, I'm not as sold on that, because my thought, people are like, that you could have traded back. And I'm like, if that's the guy you want, get him. You don't know that someone else, the Raiders were linked to Penix for a lot of that. But I was just going to say, I've come around on it. I still don't love it. I'm not as just angry, burn it all down as I was on draft night. I understand it. I really wanted Roma Dunze just to give Kirk Cousins another weapon, but I understand what they were doing. Now, if it's going to work out, remains to be seen. And I did find it kind of funny that they compared themselves to the Packers when the Packers had won 13 games the year before they drafted Jordan Love, and the Falcons had won 7.
Yeah, I don't like the comparison specifically to the Packers, because then I think it becomes like an apples to apples, like where were the Falcons at and where were the Packers at? And I think the bigger thing for me is, like, if you look at a lot of, and this is not across the board, there's plenty of teams that drafted quarterbacks and they played right away and they're successful too. But I think if you look at the teams that maybe have made some semi-surprising draft decisions where they had a veteran quarterback under a certain contract, and then they either traded up or they took a guy earlier than maybe would have been expected, it's all turned out to be pretty successful. I mean, again, I don't want to make the comparisons to teams that have specifically done it and it's already been proven, because, like, again, I'm not trying to compare Michael Penix to Patrick Mahomes, but I mean, taking Patrick Mahomes when you have Alex Smith maybe surprised some folks at the time. It turned out to be the obvious decision. Like Jordan Love, it took a little bit longer for Jordan Love to get into that starting role. And a big reason for that was because Aaron Rodgers had his two best seasons ever immediately after that draft. But you look at, even the Eagles, I think you could point to a little bit, and Jalen Hurts was a second round pick, so there's not as much risk involved in it necessarily. But I mean, when they had Carson Wentz under a big contract and they took Jalen Hurts, and then they ended up getting rid of Carson Wentz. And that's the big thing that I sort of take away from all of this, is everyone's living in this world that Kirk Cousins has to live out this 4-year contract. And that's just not the case. And while that might be shady business and Kirk Cousins might be pissed off about it, and I get all of that, it's like the Falcons they have to do what's best for the Falcons. And I think I might have a bigger issue with the price tag on a guy like Kirk Cousins at his age than going and getting a quarterback that you believe in the draft. Now, it all has to work out right. And that's the big thing. You're gambling on the timing of when Kirk Cousins starts to diminish a little bit, when Michael Penix actually becomes good, if he ever becomes good. But I'm bought into it, number one, because I think that when everybody feels the same way about something in the moment, they're generally wrong. I mean, I saw it with Josh Allen. This is how I felt about Josh Allen. I was not a Josh Allen believer. I did not look at Josh Allen and say, oh, this guy's going to be a great NFL quarterback. But I remember on draft night when the Bills took him, and they were like, oh, the Bills were the ones that took Josh Allen. And there were some people that loved his arm, but I think by and large, the feeling at the time was, oh, they're the ones that made the stupid mistake to go get the inaccurate quarterback from Wyoming that nobody knows what he's going to do. And I remember on that draft night being like, I don't really buy Josh Allen, but I do want to fade the public on this one because everybody thinks that he's going to suck. And not to say that it's turned out to be awesome, because they've had their fair share of misfortune, and I think that they're sort of in a weird turning point in their franchise right now too. But he's obviously been a sensational first-round pick, so
I think it's good logic, and it's definitely worked out for them. And I can't wait till next week when Kip comes on, because I'm giving him a soapbox too. We're going to hear what Kip thinks as well.
Do we have any idea what his opinion is?
I could probably look through that Falcons thread on the board. I don't think he's crazy about it, but I have
know,
not.
Actually. I don't want to know. I want to hear it on the podcast.
Yes, let's all learn together. We are going to take a quick break. We got to catch our breaths after talking a little Michael Penix. Yes, but we're going to talk about recruiting this time of year for Georgia, and then UJ Hoops getting a huge addition on Monday night.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Go to Paramount Plus to try it free. Terms apply.
Everyone is talking about If.
I'm going to go on a limb here, but I like it. I love it.
It's original and heartfelt.
Ta-da!
And the must-see comedy of the summer that's perfect for the whole family.
This is just so exciting.
If. Rated PG. Now playing in theaters.
Ben, this is a very important time of year in terms of recruiting. The coaches are back on the road. Hard to believe we're almost to May. Just tell us about what is going on right now for Georgia. Just how crucial this point in the calendar is. Got the contact period back on. And the Georgia coaches going out and trying to reach out to recruits in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, well, I've been out at football practices or football workouts the last 2 days so far. So I'm happy because that means that there's actual footballs and pads on, and I can be outside and, you know, checking some of these things out. So it's a great time of year because it means that some of the dull, you know, February, March timeframe where there's some things going on from a recruiting standpoint, but in terms of where I can actually be and getting out and seeing football and things like that, there's not as much of that going on. So that's happening now, which I'm happy about. But most importantly, that means the Georgia coaches are able to get out on the road. So really this week, next week, and the following week are really going to be the three big weeks, especially in the state of Georgia, but also around the country where Georgia coaches are going to be getting out on the road to see their top prospects, primarily in the 2025 class. But if you're a really big time 2026 prospect, Georgia's going to definitely swing in and see you as well. I mean, you can point to even last week, Stacy Searles, the offensive line coach, was in Missouri to see Jackson Cantwell, who's probably the top offensive line target in the 2026 class. So if you are big time in the 26 class, there's a chance that Georgia's going to be seeing, going to see you in practice as well. As always, little site, website teaser, dogs247.com. You can certainly check out my coverage that I'm going to have this week when I'm on the road. You know, I went to Lee, I'll give you a little teaser there. I went to Lee High School, Lee County, to go see Usmani Chroma, running back, today. I went to go see linebacker Zayden Walker at Lee County as well. I'm going to have a lot of coverage throughout the week, just going by to see 2025 prospects, 2026 prospects. That's going to continue throughout the week and throughout the month. Georgia coaches, they're going to be on the road as well. I know that, you know, even today, a couple Georgia coaches are going to Enterprise, Alabama, to see Eric Winters and Andrew Purcell and Zion Grady, because they've got a lot of really good prospects over there. I know that, you know, Dante Williams has been on the road all over the country, really, the last couple of days. I know he's up in Cleveland right now to go see Trey McNutt, who's a big-time defensive back that I think Georgia's trying to secretly, sneakily work its way into the mix for a little bit more than maybe we've even written about over at Dogs 24/7. So I encourage all of you to subscribe, go check things out over there, because we're going to have a lot of intel when it comes to coaches on the road. And then, you know, just with me being able to get out on the road and go to some of these practices and interview some guys, I'm going to have some pretty good information too throughout this week and the rest of the month, just, you know, as things kind of get into this busy season. I'd also say, and this is more just time of year and what you should pay attention to, if Georgia offers guys this time of year, I think it's pretty telling if they're in the 2025 class, because what likely happened is a Georgia coach got out on the road. They've heard about a guy at their position group that has put up some pretty good film, but they maybe haven't gotten eyes on them in person the way that they would like. And if they get out to a practice and they offer a guy this time of year, there's a pretty good chance that Georgia feels really strongly about that prospect. I mean, just looking at last year's cycle, I mean, Justin Williams and Joseph Jonah Ajanye were two guys at the same high school that Georgia got out to see. And I think it was pretty obvious to them when they got out to see them, hey, Justin and Joseph are pretty elite caliber, high ceiling talents. And Georgia hadn't offered at this point in the cycle. And so they were a little bit late on them, but they had the good fortune. They were lucky enough that Justin and Joseph were pretty open-minded about Georgia and that they were okay with the fact that Georgia was late. I mean, Andre Evans is another great example. Georgia offered pretty late in the cycle, and he ended up committing to LSU before Georgia ever really got a chance to host him on an official visit, bring him in on things. And then sure enough, 4 months later during the season, word starts to come out that he's come on a visit to Georgia during the week and that he's likely to flip from LSU to Georgia. And so I always like to be very aware of the offers that happen this time of year because, one, it probably came with an in-person evaluation, but, two, it probably means that Georgia feels like it was late on someone or that they need to make a push for someone. And even if that doesn't happen right away, sometimes we will see come October, come November, Georgia's now really in the thick of things for that guy.
Georgia has proven over and over better late than never, and they've been able to get in on some guys, even if they weren't the first school to wind up offering. Like Ben said, keep it glued to Dogs 24/7. He's got all kinds of good content on what's going on the recruiting trail, and you know you got to stay woke because that's how you're going to find out everything that's going on with Georgia recruiting.
We just lost like 5 subscribers because you said it out loud.
You know, it was bound to happen at some point. Speaking of recruiting, Georgia Men's Basketball Minute, a big addition for Georgia, literally and metaphorically, with a 4-star center. Samto Cyril, a 4-star center, 6'10", 240, committed to Georgia on Monday night. Now, he committed to Georgia, and he also declared for the draft. Just for a little bit of explanation, because there were a lot of people messaging me, like, what the hell does this mean? He's going to go through the process. He's going to get feedback on his game. He's coming from Overtime Elite, which allows him to do this. But he's coming to Georgia. He's not going to be a guy that winds up getting drafted. He's going to get feedback on his game, which in this situation, there's nothing to lose for Samto to do this. It's a good opportunity for him to get feedback from the NBA, see things he needs to improve on, and then go to Georgia and wind up playing for however long he is a Bulldog. But Ben, this was a huge need for Georgia. For a while there, it wasn't really clear how they were going to fill that need with Russell Chiwa running out of eligibility. But John Calipari takes the Arkansas job. Samto had been the first recruit in the 24 cycle to commit to Kentucky. And, you know, naturally people thought, all right, well, he'll follow him to Fayetteville. Now he opened it back up. Georgia made a push for him, and they fill a huge need. And I'll plug this for people who are watching this live on Tuesday. A little bit after we get done podcasting, I'm going to have a VIP breakdown on Samto's game, what stands out. Really excited about this guy. I think this was the biggest need Georgia had, and I think there's a lot of reason to be excited about adding him to the stable.
Yeah, another huge front court addition for Mike White next year. I mean, I think when you combine him with Asa Newell, with the Appalachian State transfer, who I don't want to mispronounce his name and get the B and the S crossed. So can you check me on that real quick?
Justin Abson.
Yep, Justin Abson. I think that front court is an upgrade year over year. I mean, we talked about this in previous podcasts. Like, this is a big year in terms of upgrading the roster and seeing it translate to the court. It feels to me, up to this point, it's a front court upgrade. It probably still remains to be seen a little bit in terms of what that step up is in the back court. But I think just from a sheer experience standpoint with guys like Silas Demery and Blue Kane, you're naturally going to see some improvement just from them not being freshmen anymore. I think that that's going to improve things there. And I'm sure that there's, you know, plenty of moves and things still to be made on that front, but it feels so far like it is an upgraded roster. And I think that that's where you have to start. And everybody will say, well, until they make the tournament or until you see it show up in the wins column, it doesn't really matter. But I think that you got to start with seeing the roster improve. And I think that Samto is you don't see athletic big men like that come through Athens, Georgia very often.
Not at all. And to pair him with Asa Newell and Justin Abson, as you mentioned, I think it's without a doubt a better front court. And I think that they've got a real opportunity.
I mean, really, like, I'm trying to think back when I can think that Georgia had a more optimistic outlook in their front court, at least.
I couldn't tell you. I mean, to have those guys specifically together, you know, we've had moments where one guy's come in, but it's definitely a step forward. And to me, just looking at these last few years, you know, really the entire Mike White era, I've found myself keep saying, well, what are they going to do about the front court? Because, you know, you need shooters and you need guys who can score. But to me, SEC basketball is you got to hang down low. And if you're getting pushed around, and, you know, I want to take this moment and say, like, Russell Chiwa, I thought was a really good center last year, but I thought they struggled at the four beside him. And sometimes Russ, you know, kind of came and went. It wasn't all the time, but there were games like the Tennessee game early in the season where I think he might have had 4 points. I mean, he was very, very quiet, didn't have a ton of rebounds. You're setting yourself up for a step forward. Now, again, you know, the league's going to probably be as hard as it's ever been. Calipari going to Arkansas, Mark Pope at Kentucky. Now you add Texas and Oklahoma. It's one of those things where I think – you know, measuring the success of this team is going to be very interesting because I do think they're going to be better, but is that going to show up in the win column? And we know how much that matters. It's going to be fascinating to watch because I do think they're taking steps forward. And I do want to say this too, Tuesday afternoon, as we're recording this, that RJ Godfrey, a forward from Clemson, guy Georgia's been after very hard. His dad played football at Georgia. He was going to take a visit to Auburn, canceled that visit. I think that's very, very good news for Georgia. I think that would be another quality addition. So they're making moves in the right direction. I believe right now they've got 5 open scholarships. I like what they're doing. They still need to add a few more pieces. But to me, Cyril checks the biggest box that Georgia had to get a center. There's a lot to like with this guy. I think things are trending in the right direction while, again, acknowledging it's going to be hard living in this SEC with 16 teams and everybody scrapping to just get a win every night.
Yeah. I mean, that's where it really comes down to is living above 500 in SEC play. And I think that's where Georgia struggled the last 2 years is they've entered SEC play with a lot of high hopes. And then SEC play is gone the way that SEC play should probably be expected to go when your roster is not as good as everyone else's. So yeah, it'll be fun to watch, but I was definitely going down the Sompto rabbit hole of highlights, and it was fun to watch.
A lot of dunks, and that was something that Chiwa got a lot of flack for. I don't think all that fairly, because he dunked every once in a while, but about every second highlight of Sompto Cyril is a dunk. So Georgia fans shouldn't have to worry about that going into next season.
Yeah.
So before we get out of here, Ben, I wanted to talk about a passion of mine, and I have to think you probably feel pretty good about this, but college football video games. And I think that was on Monday, Matt Brown from Extra Points shared sort of NCAA, or I should say EA Sports, is planned for the new video game. You know, it sounds like it's going to come out in the summer, but they're going to have different cover athletes. And from the way I understand it, there's going to be a different cover athlete from each conference, and you won't have somebody from the same position between those different coverage. You know, my thought is Shedeur Sanders will probably be the quarterback. I think that makes a lot of sense with him from Colorado. I've seen other pitches. I think Donovan Edwards from Michigan would make sense. But is there a player in college football, it doesn't necessarily have to be a Georgia player, that you'd like to see on this cover, someone you think makes a lot of sense would be a good fit when you look to the college football game coming back?
All right, I'm actually going to try and call my shot here in terms of who I think who the four are from each conference. And I think it's 4 different positions too, right?
That's the way I understood it.
All right, so I think the quarterback is going to be Carson Beck. And that might be bold. He might not be as marketable as some of the other quarterbacks, but I do think that in the football world, he's seen as the most likely quarterback to go number one right now, even though I know odds of at different places look a little bit different. So I'm going to say Carson is the quarterback and the SEC representative. I do think there will be a Colorado guy for just because of the marketability of it all. And I think that Travis Hunter, he has a Twitch background. He has a gaming background. He plays both sides of the ball. He kind of has a video game type of playing style. So I think that Travis Hunter will end up being the Colorado representative, even though I know that everyone thinks that Deion's son is probably the more likely candidate because, you know, he's Deion's son, Coach Prime's son. And then let's see here. So that leaves, what does that leave? The Big Ten and the ACC?
Believe so.
All right. So Big Ten, it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense for it to be Quinshon Judkins because he just got there. But big transfer portal addition. I'm assuming that he had a pretty nice little NIL addition to it. There's going to have to be a running back in some capacity, and he's one of the best ones. So I guess I'll go Quinshon Judkins there, even though probably my least confident pick. And then the ACC is a wild card. I mean, I don't even know who to think in the ACC. I'd probably lean defense. So I'm probably going to have to put a pin in this one and circle back on who I would think. But I think it'll be a defensive player from the ACC.
Sammy Brown, just a freshman they're going to throw on there. No, I honestly, you throwing that out there, the Travis Hunter video game piece of it makes too much sense to me now that you say that, because I thought, oh, they'll put Shadur on there. But a lot of people, you know, when the conversation was coming out on Monday, were like, well, Travis Hunter's their best player. I'm like, yeah, but, you know, that's never stopped the video game before. But the fact he has a Twitch background, I think you're right. I think it's going to be Travis Hunter. And that sets up for Carson Beck to be the quarterback. I think that Travis Hunter pick makes a ton of sense.
Well, and I'll, you know, this is not to, I don't have a super polarizing viewpoint on the Colorado. I know everybody's got some opinion on Colorado. I really don't. I see the positives in the Colorado situation. I see the negatives in the Colorado situation. But one thing I will say is I think a big reason for the buzz of Deion Sanders and the program that he's at and everything really, really all took off when Travis Hunter committed to Jackson State. And I think that there was so much just buzz and energy around that individual decision and him following Deion Sanders to Colorado. I think, you know, Deion Sanders is the draw because he's the name and he's the personality. But I really do think that Travis Hunter is the reason that Jackson State and Colorado have gotten all of the publicity and interest around it as they did, because I think that if he just chooses to go to Florida State or Georgia, I don't think any of the interest around Shadur or Jackson State or Colorado reaches the level that it did because of Travis Hunter, because he's a guy that is just was universally thought to be the number one prospect on either side of the ball. And so that's why I think he makes a lot of sense as a video game cover. I think that opens the door for Carson Beck as the quarterback, which I think makes a lot of sense too.
You bringing that up just reminded me, were you listening to any of those Twitter spaces after Travis Hunter picked Jackson State? I mean, that was one of the all-time being online days. It was incredible.
Well, yeah, and that was – I'm blanking on exactly what recruiting class that was, but that was short – either the year after – it was 1 or 2 years after I had stopped covering Auburn, so I was just working a boring old desk job for a little while, and that was one of those few signing days that I was – more following it as a fan and just seeing this, like I was as shocked as anybody else would have been as it happened. But yeah, that was a fun one to follow.
Class of 2022, if that.
Okay, so that was a little while out. Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, was that coming off the season they had lost to Jacksonville State? Like I think the Seminoles were pretty down bad at that point, and that was just sort of another kick in the gut.
I think that is the case.
Well, we are going to wrap up this episode right here. Another fun one with Ben. Appreciate everyone for watching this live, everyone who is listening to this after the fact. Be sure and go to dogs247.com and subscribe if you haven't already. Still got a ton of stuff coming out of spring ball. Still got UGA hoops coverage. Breaking down all of these signees, all these commits that they've had, getting ready for their new season. Also sign up and keep up with all of the recruiting news for the Georgia Bulldogs. Ben Wolk's got you covered there. All kinds of good content there. Go to YouTube if you haven't already and subscribe to Dogs 24/7. Got all these podcast episodes. You've got all the interviews from the spring with Kirby Smart and players. Before too long, we'll be back at SEC Media Days. I'm sure we'll have videos out of that as well. And all the Mike White videos. And hopefully we'll get to talk to some of those guys in the spring, really in the next month, I should say, for spring meetings that'll be going on. Down in Destin. Also, go check out Dogs 24/7 on TikTok. Got all kinds of videos there. content out of that NFL draft on there, as well as some of these podcast episodes. So for Ben Wolk and Jordan Hill, I'm Jordan Hill. Until next time, take care, everybody.